What's going on, Eagles fans? Welcome into the Locked On Eagles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day. It's Louis DiBiase joining you on this Wednesday edition of the podcast. Of course, as always, alongside my co-host, Mr. Gino Camilleri. What's up, sir? How you doing with all this full stuff? Making your head spin like it is me?
No, not really. I trust Howie. Have trusted him for a while, especially.
It is Howie season. This is when he lives.
Yeah, that's exactly what I tweeted yesterday as soon as all that news went through that they declined the option and or Foles declined the option and so on and so forth. And I trust them. I'm sure there's constant communication between them and they both want what is best for Nick Foles. And what's best for the Eagles is that he doesn't play in the division next year. And I think Nick would probably like to not play against the Eagles. Maybe he has some built up animosity, but I think he's going to get put in a good position. He definitely deserves to be put in a good position, and Howie is definitely going to get compensated for a top 20 quarterback.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. They have till, well, they can franchise tag him. They have picked up the option, and Foles yesterday pretty much instantly bought his way back into free agency by giving the Eagles that $2 million back with that mutual option. So the Eagles can tag him starting February 19th, and I believe they have till, what, March 5th, right?
Correct.
So it's going to be interesting. Until then, we'll see how he clearly thinks. Like, he doesn't have a deal on the table right now, but he clearly thinks that he can get something for him. And that if he franchise tags Nick Foles, that's going to tell you instantly that they have a trade in place. And I got into all of that on the podcast yesterday. You can check that out on LockedOnEagles.com or on Twitter at DiBiase, L-O-E, or at LockedOnBirds. And, of course, on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, or anywhere that you listen to the Locked On Eagles podcast. But one of our listeners, Gino, actually responded to me today in regards to that episode yesterday, and Yahoo Sports wrote an interesting article today about how the Eagles' apparent tag and trade plan could violate the CBA. Well, it would violate the CBA if Nick Foles could prove it, if he could win this battle, if Foles really did not want to get tagged and then traded to a destination that he can't control. Apparently, he could claim that in the CBA, if a team tags a player without the intent to actually employ that player, if that was it the entire time, that's the reason that they tag him, that he could fight that. And it's interesting because, I don't know, for me, Gino, I don't want to ruin this relationship with Nick Foles. If it's only for a third-round pick like Adam Schefter reported, just give me the 2020 comp pick. But I just can't imagine Nick Foles is the kind of guy that would want to do this. Like, look, I know he's someone that wants to be in the right situation after what he went through with the Rams in 2015. But at the same time, if the Eagles prefer to trade him to Jacksonville, like Chris Mortensen reported, I don't know if there's really a better situation out there. Like you mentioned about him staying in the NFC East, maybe the Giants are a better situation. Certainly Washington isn't. That kind of seems like a Rams 2.0 situation all over again. There's no talent there on the offensive side of the ball. So if the Eagles really do want to move him to Jacksonville, I just don't see why he would fight them on that, considering with John DeFilippo there, that probably seems like the best destination for him. I don't know. It's just me, but I don't know if it's going to come down to all this Le'Veon Bell-like drama.
I don't think it's going to. And if Nick Foles accepts to be traded to the Jaguars off of a franchise tag, it actually works in his favor because he's going to be making upwards of $5 million more than he would under his initial contract. So I think that is definitely something Howie considered. I think it's something Nick would consider, obviously, that he could improve the amount of money he is going to make in a scenario where, one, the free agent class outside of Nick Foles isn't the best for quarterbacks, and this draft class, I don't know if anybody's not flushed their toilet lately because it's probably the same smell as this quarterback class because it stinks. Jacksonville's probably going to want to get a solidified quarterback, somebody that's not Blake Bortles, somebody that is a proven winner and can really elevate that offense. Because look at Jacksonville. They had a solid team. They were in the AFC Championship 2 years ago, and they didn't have any direction with their quarterback, and it killed them. It really did. You saw it when they played the Eagles this year, that if they had a competent quarterback, that they probably would have beat us in London. And I think a quarterback like Nick Foles for a third-round pick is an absolute steal. Looking back, you look at Tyrod Taylor, the compensation the Browns gave up for him. Tyrod was not as much of a winner as Nick Foles was, and some of the other deals, like Matt Flynn in past history, Nick Foles is better than all of these backups who have gotten these quote-unquote starter-slash-bridge deals, and he definitely deserves to be compensated, and the Eagles deserve to be compensated for it, because how many times do a Super Bowl MVP hit the market at the quarterback position?
Yeah, that's true, and hopefully there's enough competition to where someone would be like Jacksonville and say, let's just give them a third round pick and get him now instead of risking him going into unrestricted free agency and saying, actually, hey, I want to go play with the New York Giants. So, you know, a lot of people say, well, what leverage do the Eagles have? It really comes down to, like you said, Gino, you know, if Nick Foles hits the open market, he is the, I mean, outside, even the draft class itself, I feel like Nick Foles is the best option if you're looking for a quarterback this year.
Definitely.
I'm just interested to see what other teams would really be in play. I tried going into it yesterday. Is there another team that Nick Foles would be okay with going to in a tag and trade outside of, say, Jacksonville? I just can't imagine we trade him to the Giants. Maybe Washington, almost doing a McNabb 2.0, but Nick Foles is better than what McNabb was at that point. I don't know. Is there another team? I mean, everyone keeps mentioning Miami, but they have a new GM and a new head coach. Do they really want to hitch their wagon to Foles?
I think you could see Miami, especially if they plan on bringing in a younger quarterback. I've heard and read a lot of the mock drafts that Kyler could be the guy. Who knows if they trade up and take a stab at Dwayne Haskins. But the thing is, these quarterbacks that are coming out, they're not Baker Mayfields. They're not Sam Darnolds. And I would even say if Josh Allen came out in this class, he would probably be the first one taken because there's not much talent there. So if you need a guy that is going to come in and develop a young quarterback, why don't you get somebody in Nick Foles who has been in that situation before? And who knows, if Nick Foles comes out, you sign him for a 3-year extension, he does good job for the next 2 years, that team could trade him as well. You have to take your assets and get something for them, and Howie's the king of doing that. So look at a team like Miami that's going in a new direction. You look at Jacksonville, who's also going in a new direction. I think those are two probably the favorites right now, as in Vegas is showing them both to be the favorites. I don't see an NFC East move happening. You look at Gattelman with the Giants. He is enamored by Eli Manning still. God knows why, and I'm not really going to complain that we have to see Eli Manning for the next year, maybe another year after that. And then Washington, it's really up in the air. That's the one that maybe Dan Snyder wants to overpay for a quarterback and bring him in.
That seems like such a Dan Snyder move.
Yeah, it definitely would be, taking the Eagles' scraps, i.e. DeSean Jackson, i.e. Donovan McNabb, and a multitude of other players.
You're calling DeSean a scrap?
No, I'm not saying scraps, but I'm saying guys that we've tossed by the wayside.
No, I feel you.
Yeah, definitely. It could be a move there, but I'm thinking AFC is probably the move that Howie wants to do the most. Probably Jacksonville. If I had to take a guess right at this current point in time, I'd say the Jaguars.
Hopefully they can find a trade partner, and hopefully it works for both sides and it doesn't really make a Green Bay Packers, Brett Favre, like, tension between these two, because, you know, the Eagles have done a lot for Foles when it comes to giving him extra money in the past couple of years, and of course Foles has done a ton for this organization over the past 2 years, and even in 2013 he created some awesome memories for us. So the last thing I'll say is, again, if they do tag Nick Foles between February 19th and March 5th, expect a deal soon after to immediately be announced, because they cannot afford to risk tagging him and then saying, okay, now let's try to find a partner. Because if Foles does sign that tag, you could be on the hook for $25 million if you can't find a partner. And so basically, if they tag him and they have a deal in place, there's not a whole lot of risk, because it would basically show to the league that they have a trade in place. Because if they didn't and then they rescinded the tag, like say Foles doesn't sign the tag and then they rescind it, they lose that comp pick in 2020. So the last thing is, if they do franchise tag Nick Foles, there is a deal in place, and that's pretty much what everybody's been saying has to happen. So coming up next on the Locked On Eagles podcast, me and Gino are going to get into some tips for the offseason for you, the listeners, what to expect, what you should listen for, what you should know. So we're going to get into things like being careful of the salary cap, watching the film when it comes to college prospects, all that and more. This is the Locked On Eagles podcast. All right, everybody, welcome back into Locked On Eagles, Wednesday, February 6th. We are getting into it. The combine coming up in a couple weeks, then free agency. We are in the offseason right here on Locked On Eagles. We got you covered all throughout the year. So next up on the show, me and Gino, we have some tips for you for the offseason. We're going to get into, you know, who to listen for when it comes to the right reporters to listen to for rumors, and what rumors to listen to, and how much we should put stock into the Senior Bowl. So, Gino, I just want to start it off with this. For fans out there, be careful of certain rumors and reports. And it's not that I'm really calling out any certain reporters, although there are a certain number that or buddy-buddy with some head coaches. I won't go out and say names, although I think we all know who I'm talking about. There's some reporters that do not have a great track record, but look out for – don't really put 100% stock into the rumors and reports that you see out on social media, because a lot of the time it could be the agents that are using, let's say, that Le'Veon Bell report that he might prefer to play with Miami. That kind of, to me, seems like a leverage move by Le'Veon Bell's team, his agent kind of sending that information out there, or Howie Roseman maybe pushing information out there to boost a trade market for a certain player. I don't know, but do not put 100% stock in rumors and reports about certain offseason moves. Is that fair, Gino?
I think so, and you've seen it time and time again. I mean, you go to Frank Gore a couple years ago. It was reported that he was coming to Philly, and then
Eagles legend Frank Gore.
8 minutes later, he's not an Eagle. So yeah, this is the time of the year that people are going to get caught up in hearsay and who said this, who said that. My one recommendation, and I've been victim of this before, especially if you get most of your news from Twitter, make sure you do not get duped by the fake Adam Schefters of the world, the fake Ian Rappaports, because it could leave you eating crow. I've done it. Some of the best reporters, some of the most credible reporters have done it themselves. Just make sure you know who you're looking for. I'll just throw out some of the best names. You got Shefty, of course, Chris Mortensen. You got Ian Rappaport. Josina Anderson has broken some big names, i.e. Elshon Jeffrey. There are some good names out there that you could get good information from. Pay attention to agents. You can get a list of agents. I know you can just Google that and see big name sports agents. Usually they like to say where their client goes before they break it to the news sometimes. I've seen that. You could follow outside of Philadelphia beat reporters within other regions. I follow Omar Kelly for Miami, and I found out about when Jay Ajayi was getting traded before any of the big news outlets, probably like 20 minutes prior, and I can remember that vividly, sitting at my desk and seeing him tweet that before it really got picked up. So just make sure you know what you're doing, check for the blue check marks, and don't get duped by the fools.
Yeah, don't get duped by at rap sheet with two P's. We've seen on SportsCenter, we've seen that happen where they put on the graphic an account that is fake.
Mm-hmm.
It's hilarious, but that happens all the time, and it's not even just in the NFL. We see that with the NBA and the NHL trade deadlines where, trade deadlines are big in those leagues, but for the NFL offseason, like, that happens all the time. I can't tell you how many times I see that, typical Adam Schefter profile picture, and it's this crazy trade, and I end up going nuts only for like 30 seconds later I realize that I fell for it. And yeah, big companies fall for it, so definitely a good tip by Gino there. One for me here is to not get too caught up in free agency. So I'm not saying adding free agents isn't key to building a championship roster, because in 2017, one of the keys for the Eagles winning it all was adding Alshon Jeffrey, was adding Torrey Smith. And who else did we add in that free agency class? Ronald Darby. Well, we traded for Ronald Darby, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we made some key additions. We didn't go
Chris
too
Long.
Crazy. Right. Chris Long was another one. That's good. Offseason additions from other teams, bringing in free agents, trades like Michael Bennett, they can be extremely beneficial. What we don't want to do, we have to learn from our mistakes. The Eagles, I'm not as worried about. It's more so for the fans. Like, don't be super upset if your team doesn't go crazy in on free agency. Because, let's just go back to 2011 with the Eagles.
Please don't.
I know, I'm sorry, I have to bring it up. They pretty much built their entire defense through free agents from other teams. Remember Cullen Jenkins at defensive tackle from Green Bay. Jason Babin came back to the team. Nnamdi Asamoah, Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. They tried building this super team of free agents. And then on offense, they brought in Ronnie Brown in the backfield with McCoy. They brought in Vince Young to back up Michael Vick. Don't put all of your eggs in one basket when it comes to how you're building your roster. And it's not just in free agency. You can't just go all in on the draft either. You have to add some key veterans, not just on the trade market. And I feel like that's what Howie Roseman has done so well. And tell me if I'm wrong here, Gino, but he's pretty much brought in huge core pieces from almost every avenue. Malcolm Jenkins in free agency in 2014, Alshon Jeffrey in free agency. He traded for Jay Ajayi, which helped them win a Super Bowl, helped, trade for Michael Bennett. He's drafted key guys like Derek Barnett. You got to go with pretty much every avenue to add talent to the roster.
Definitely. And as Eagles fans, like you mentioned, the 2011 season, we've seen the good and the bad of free agency.
Right.
Malcolm Jenkins We all wanted Jairus Byrd. I know I'd say probably 75% of Eagles fans were pounding the table for Jairus Byrd. So one thing I'll say is the scouting staff, the GM, they know a lot better than we do. They know a lot better what the coaches want. They know a lot better what they are going to get value-wise, because you're not going to go out and shell out big contracts like Chip Kelly did in that 2013-2014 offseason, where he got guys like Kiko Alonso. He traded LeSean McCoy away. He signs Byron Maxwell to an outrageous deal. Just trust in Howie, especially our organization. Look for him to try and get to free agents that are undervalued. There's right. going to be guys that are coming off of injuries. We've seen that with Jay Ajayi and i.e. Ronald Darby, possibly. You could get him on a one-year flyer deal. Look at Alshon Jeffrey. Teams were scared of him and his injury history. He signs for a one-year deal, and it was a proven deal.
Hey, how about Patrick Robinson in that offseason, too?
Exactly, yeah. You have to trust them, and they're going to get the right guys. One, you cannot load up on free agency, like you said, and you can't focus solely on the draft, and good teams capitalize on that. You've seen New England do it. They brought in some guys that were undervalued, i.e. Jason McCourty, i.e. Danny Shelton, for lesser in trades along those lines. You get them for less than cost, and that's how you have to attack free agency. That's how you have to attack the draft. You're not going to go out and draft for need. You're going to draft the best players. Free agency, you're going to get the best players, but you're not going to shell out huge amounts of money. And that probably leads us to the next tip, that you should probably not get too focused on the salary cap, because 100%. Howie Roseman has basically proved that it's an imaginary number.
Yeah, it goes up every year, the cap number. There's so many ways to just keep kicking the can down the road where you just continue to move the cap hits down every single year by turning the cap hit. Now you can restructure a deal, like, let's say, Rodney McLeod, where they went from, what was it, a $10 million hit this year to like a $4.5 million hit, and they gave a lot of that money back to him in guaranteed money with signing bonuses and incentives. And they've done that with so many players. Zach Ertz, Lane Johnson, Brandon Brooks, Fletcher Cox, I think Malcolm Jenkins did it, now Rodney McLeod. And you just continue to move that cap hit down and down and down until eventually you get rid of that cap hit. And again, like, the NFL salary cap went up by $10 million this year. There's just so many ways to get around it. And, you know, you can't, there's ways to mismanage the cap, absolutely. But when you have a capologist like Howie Roseman as your GM, where, remember, Chip Kelly used to call him a cap guy, and at the time it was kind of a backhanded compliment, but it is true. Howie Roseman is very good with the salary cap. And every single year we hear, oh man, we can't sign Nigel Bradham this year. We have no money. Or we can't bring in this guy. Or we can't sign this player. And every single time you're like, wow, Howie Roseman just added five players that we didn't think was possible. And yeah, a lot of them are bargain players like Patrick Robinson a couple years ago and LeGarrette Blount. But then there's also some bigger ones. And you're just thinking, where are they finding this money? There's just so much wiggle room. The salary cap is so complex. There's so much to it that we don't understand. And it's just something that fans get really caught up in. And what we're trying to tell you right now is, and Howie Roseman said it in his end-of-the-year press conference, like, don't worry about the salary cap. It's not going to stop us from adding really good talent.
Definitely. And Howie knows exactly how to work the salary cap. And you're going to see these deals, and you're going to see a lot of them probably have big, scary numbers. But don't be worried about them, because Howie knows exactly what to do. I made mention when we interviewed Michael Kiss that this team drafts for needs that are 2 to 3 years down the road. Howie Roseman creates contracts that are going to be able to, one, meet the needs of the team 2 to 3 years down the road, and help this team get under the salary cap 2 to 3 years down the road through restructuring, through having outs in the contracts like you would have had in Rodney McLeod's deal before he restructured. Nigel Bradham doesn't have much guaranteed money. So looking at cap numbers at face value is a scary thing, and you'll probably see the Eagles right now don't have much cap space, but what did they have last year? 14 some odd million dollars.
Yep.
They were able to bring in some high quality talent. You look at Mike Wallace, even though he got injured, you bring in a guy like him, and you bring in some vets that are going to fit the needs
Michael
of your
Bennett.
Team.
They put Michael
Bennett
on
too.
That
exactly. Yeah. That was through a trade, but still, you're going to be able to work things out. And by March 13th at 4 p.m., I will have this team under the salary cap, all set and ready to go to sign some free agents.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Michael Bennett was through a trade, and he still, though, had an $8 million cap hit, and they threw it on the books, and look, they found a way to get it done with moving Vinnie Curry. There's just so many ways to clear up space, and with contracts, there's just, You can guarantee money through different ways. You can backload contracts. You can front load contracts. Just don't let the salary cap scare you into thinking that your team can't add talent throughout the offseason. Let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll continue with some tips for the offseason. Now we're going to gear towards the draft. This is the Locked On Eagles podcast. All right, everybody, welcome back to the third and final segment of this Wednesday edition of Locked On Eagles. Louis DiBiase alongside my co-host, Gino Camilleri. So, Gino, I don't know if you're going to agree with this one, because you've kind of mentioned it already in the show today, and you've mentioned it in past shows. But I don't buy, so I don't want to say teams draft for need, but to me, there's a middle ground here when it comes to how teams go about drafting. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's necessarily just best player available either, because I think, honestly, that's kind of almost as irresponsible as taking a guy like Danny Watkins in the first round just because you need an interior offensive lineman. Teams do draft for need, but also at the same time, it has to do with value, the value of a position, like how important the position is. It comes to depth of a draft class. If you believe that there are 30, 40 really good defensive linemen and you also need a receiver, and maybe the defensive lineman's like five spots ahead on the draft board than that receiver, but you know you can get a really good lineman in the second round, just a couple picks back, you might take that receiver. I'm not saying that teams just go through based on solely need, but at the same time, like the Eagles right now, I feel like it would be irresponsible to say, we believe in all five of our young corners, but we're going to take another cornerback in the first round. I don't know. I'm not saying that teams draft solely for need, but you just look at the trends, and there's not a lot of teams that you're saying when they take a player, like, yeah, they already have like five good players at that spot. I think there's a middle passage here between drafting for need and drafting solely best player available.
Absolutely, and the reason why I said that is because of the recent trends of the Eagles, and yeah. I've said it multiple times, how they drafted Derek Barnett, how they drafted Dallas Goedert, both at positions that they had very good talent. They were supplying for a couple years down the road, but like you said, you are going to get some picks that are for need, that are forced. You look at Donnell Pumphrey from a couple years ago, they missed out on that huge class, and they were kind of twiddling their thumbs through the first three rounds, and they said, oh shoot, we really have to get one of these running backs, and I feel like this is kind of a more pick for need pick. But the two things I am always scared of are, one, overdrafting a player,
okay,
and two, taking a player at a position that is deep. So like you said, in this draft class, the defensive line class it's going to be historic. Howie Roseman has said it, we've said it multiple times. If there's a position, say a Josh Jacobs or a Nasir Adderley is there at, two positions that aren't incredibly deep. Safety's a lot deeper than running back, but still not as deep in comparison to the defensive line. If you know that you can probably get one of those defensive linemen down the road, like you said, in the early second, especially with the Eagles with two picks in the middle 50s picks, it might be worth overdrafting a guy like Josh Jacobs or Nasir Adderley that can definitely contribute to your team right away. But my thing is, if you have a defensive lineman on the board who's ranked 25th or who's ranked 15th and you're picking at 25th and he's still there and he's the best player, I think you have to go get him. And
no,
I
get what you're saying. Like, if there's a guy that falls to you 15 picks where he really shouldn't be, mm-hmm, I understand taking him. I understand not reaching on a guy for a need, like saying, yeah, definitely, okay, this guy might be 30 spots below where we're about to pick him, but we really need a running back. Like, I get that 100%. I just think it's also irresponsible to say, well, look, this defensive lineman is six spots ahead of Josh Jacobs, but there's not a lot of running backs after Josh Jacobs that we really like, and we believe that this guy might be available in the next round for us, or there's another defensive lineman we really like that maybe isn't as high on our board, but we're still very high on. I also, at the same time, don't want to just be taking someone solely because he's ahead on the board than another player. Like, if there's a huge gap, then 100% mm-hmm, I understand passing on him. I just think, I understand that teams don't just draft solely for need, but I think they take the best player available based on their needs. And that's why, like, even Derek Barnett, yeah, we had Brandon Graham, we had Vinnie Curry, but that was going to be a need eventually. Vinnie Curry's cap hit, they mm-hmm weren't going to keep that on the books for long. Brandon Graham was 30 at the time. Like, they eventually were going to need defensive end, and they needed depth. So that's the thing, too, is, yeah, they could use depth at that position as well. I'm just not for saying, all right, we already have four really good wide receivers, but this guy's the best player available. Let's take him. It's like, well, if he's not going to see the field because you like everything else that you already have at that position on your roster currently, that's also irresponsible just taking that player because he's the best.
Agreed. I can't argue with anything you just said there, but this is the time when you're going to realize what organizations know what they're doing and what organizations don't know what they're doing. And I thoroughly trust Howie Roseman. I can guarantee that Howie Roseman will make two, if not three, trades to either trade up or trade back in this draft, because he's going to want to keep compiling assets. And you look at last year's class, what, we have five or six picks? Mm-hmm. You can't have five or six picks every single year and expect to refresh your roster. Howie Roseman mentions that you have a 15 to 20% turnover. Now that Carson is going to have to get paid, that 15 to 20% is going to move upwards of 25 to 30% turnover. You're going to have those draft picks. You're going to have 8, 9, 10, maybe even 11 draft picks going forward. And you're going to have the people in place to draft the guys for those needs down the road when you're going to have to make decisions on contracts. What's going to happen with Zach Ertz when he has to resign and you have a Dallas Goedert in the waiting? Are right. you going to resign him for big money? Those are the things you have to be wary of. And it's really great to understand where this team lies. Lou and I will be breaking down the state of the roster moving forward into 2019 and breaking it down for multiple years, because that's what they're doing behind the scenes. They're not looking just, oh, this is the 2019 draft class. You look when they drafted Carson Wentz, they looked at that class next year. They said, okay, let's go up and get Carson, because there's not going to be a guy there that we feel confident in taking. So teams are going to do that. They're going to understand that this linebacking class is one of the worst in years. This running back class isn't the greatest it has been. Wide receiver, there's a lot of depth at round three. They understand that, and good organizations do understand that. So once you see teams start to overdraft or even underdraft players, that's when you're going to start to get things in a rhythm. That's when the draft is going to get going, and that's when those guys that grade the draft class at the end are going to look like fools in 2 to 3 years down the road, when those guys who weren't even playing in year one are making serious contributions because they were able to sit on the bench. They're able to play in sub packages and your big nickel, your big dime. They're going to come off the bench on third down and rush the passer. You can't just have guys that don't have the ability to come in and start right away in those early rounds and expect them to start. You can't look at rounds 4 through 7 and expect guys to start right away. You have to understand that there's development for all of these players. Understand where you can develop, where you can afford to cut back at some positions in free agency because there is a big draft class. And I'll quit my ramblings because I basically covered everything I wanted to there. And I trust Howie Roseman. He knows better than you and me. He knows better than probably 90% of the NFL. And you've seen that. And with this draft class, I'm in the depths of it. I've been reading up everywhere, Draft Network, reading tons of mock drafts, reading tons of player write-ups. There's a lot of talent to be excited about in this upcoming draft class.
Yeah, the draft is just so complex that you can't just say, like, a team doesn't draft for need and a team doesn't draft, you know, the best player available. There's just so much going into it with contracts and with, you know, what they need down the road. It's very in-depth, and you need to be able to be going into it with an open mind. You know, here, tell me if this one's wrong. Or not that it's wrong, but don't you agree, like, listeners, get ready for comparisons. Is that, like, can we already see the Tyree Jackson, Josh Allen comparisons coming for the next, like, 4 months?
Yeah, I've been saying that comparison, actually. But, yeah, that's one of the big pet peeves in the scouting world is, like, these offhanded comparisons. And you're going to see that, and I want to say, don't, one, put stock into these comparisons too much, and two, don't put as much stock into testing like the 40-yard dash or these tests that can make players look overvalued and look better than they actually are on tape. And since I've been in the scouting academy, you know how much I hate people that just box score scout and look at stats and look at measurements and all that. You have to look what's on the field and look how they produce in your system. And, oh, you may look at a guy like Dexter Lawrence, who looks good for Clemson. He wins a national championship. But does he fit the need of a Philadelphia Eagles team that likes their defensive tackles to get upfield and allow Fletcher Cox to move? Is he good in run stopping? Is Nasir Adderley a safety that could come in and play in sub packages? You have to see what they look on the field. I know in past years I've been caught up in – when we got Byron Maxwell in free agency, I go, oh, this guy, he's a good cornerback. But I didn't understand that he can't play man coverage. And if he's not in a cover three, he's not going to succeed. So don't put much stock into names. Put more stock into skill than anything.
Yeah, I'm with you. I wrote that down as watch the film. Don't put too much stock into pro days or the combine. Remember the clown show that was Johnny Manziel's pro day with the helmet on and the shoulder pads?
Yeah, that was ridiculous.
And the crazy music. And then meanwhile, Teddy Bridgewater at his pro day took off the gloves in the rain and had a terrible pro day, and he ended up falling late into the first round. So I'm telling we're telling fans to put more stock into the film than anything. But at the same time, teams need to do that too, because don't you agree? Some teams get caught up in all the hype.
Yeah, look at John Ross a couple years ago. He runs the fastest 40 time ever, and he's not even able to stay on the field or contribute to that Cincinnati Bengals team for more than a couple catches and a couple touchdowns a year. So exactly what you have to do. You have to look at these guys at face value, look at them on the film, look at what their skill sets are. And the one thing I'll leave everybody with is don't look at what a guy can't do. Look at what a player can do.
I like that.
One of the good examples is this year when George Kittle started to pop off. Everybody goes, oh, he's not as – or Zach Ertz isn't as good as George Kittle. He only has – he's only averaging like 7 or 8 yards of reception, and he doesn't have yak ability. Yeah, because that's not who Zach Ertz is. Zach Ertz is an elite player who runs elite routes and uses his elite leverage to compete in a zone – compete against zone defenses, and he's very good at the catch point. George Kittle is a very good run after the catch tight end. You know who else is a very good run after the catch tight end? Dallas Goedert, and that's why they drafted him to fit that those needs. You look at the Eagles' needs right now. You look at they need a field stretching wide receiver. You can't just go out there and get a guy who runs a straight line 4-2 because he might not be able to separate at the top of his routes. There's a lot of things that goes into the evaluation of these players that you can't just look at 40 times. You can't just look at stats from college. You have to look at their complete skill set, understand what they can do, how they can contribute to your team, because in those late rounds, 4 through 7, you're looking at guys with 1 or 2 good skill sets that are going to play a part into your offense or defense, and that you can develop their skill sets into other skills down the road. But you want to outline some guys like a Mac Hollins, who he was good at one thing. He was good at getting down the field, and that's why the Eagles took him. Same with Shelton Gibson. He was good at getting down the field, and that's why the Eagles took him. So understand what players can do. Don't fault them for what they can't do. Just figure out what they can do for your system. And Howie Roseman and Joe Douglas are as good of a tandem as doing that in the NFL as any other front office.
The last thing I'll end with here on the Locked On Eagles podcast is that no prospect is a finished product.
And no, not
look,
at all.
As much as you could have hated Josh Allen as a prospect last year for the Buffalo Bills coming out of Wyoming, the advanced stats guys, the Football Outsiders, as much as they're useful to football nowadays and edge sports and all the advanced analytics, at the same time calling Josh Allen a, quote, parody of a prospect, I don't like when people pretty much say a player – coming out of college, like, that's what he is for his career. I just don't agree with that, and I don't like when people box score scout either. I'm with you. The 57% completion percentage thing with Josh Allen, I thought really hurt his stock, and although he was still a 7th overall pick by the Bills, the amount of negative publicity he got throughout the draft process, I just think was a little unfair, and I think the same thing happened with Lamar Jackson. You got to watch the film. There's things that you don't see in the stats. And just don't assume that, like, what Josh Allen was at Wyoming in the Mountain West is what he's going to be for the rest of his career. He already showed signs of significant development in the second half of the season with the Buffalo Bills. So that's my last thing, Gino, is just that no prospect is a finished product.
Absolutely. And one thing that always sticks in my head, you may look at guys that come from these small schools, as we saw in Dallas Goedert. And one thing that has really stuck with me since that draft, when Howie and Joe Douglas came out to discuss that pick, Joe Douglas said, when you look at these small school guys, there's one thing that you want to see out of them is domination. And I think that's a good way to look at prospects in general, is when they're in their junior and senior years, have they taken that next step from the year prior? Are they beating competition? Are they beating those freshmen? Are they beating those sophomores? Are they beating those mid-major teams? When you're looking at guys like that, when you're looking at guys in the double A, like Carson Wentz and Dallas Goedert, are they the best player by a mile on their team? and don't get scared away from small school guys, because everybody has a role. Everybody can contribute. You look at Avante Maddox. Pittsburgh isn't a very good football school. We know that. But look at him, what he did for this team. He came out, they understood his skill set, and he made a serious contribution. So just understand the football minds, the powers that'll be, know way better than you and I do. They know way better than most of the NFL does. And they're going to put this team in a position to succeed because, frankly, they know that this is a big offseason upcoming. They know what they have to hit on in free agency. They know the strengths of the draft, and they know what number they're going to get Carson at, and that what they have to work around for the near future, because right now Carson Wentz and Fletcher Cox are the only two guys on this team with guaranteed jobs, like Michael Bennett said. So there's going to be a lot of roster turnover, a lot of new names. Understand that these guys are going to push this team in the right direction to succeed for years to come. I'll leave you with that. Thank you, everybody.
You sold me on the small school guys. Do you know that? Let's go get Bruce Anderson, huh? The North Dakota State running back. I'm sold.
You know who I'm pounding the table for. Nasir Adderley. That's my guy. Delaware.
Well, that's going to do it for today's Locked On Eagles podcast. Hope everyone takes those tips for the offseason and runs with it. For Gino Camilleri, my co-host, I'm Lou DiBiase signing off. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Birds, at DiBiase LOE, and at Gino_LOE. Please check out our written content as well on LockedOnEagles.com. Please subscribe to the show. Hopefully leave us a 5-star rate and review. For my co-host, Gino Camilleri, once again, I'm Lou DiBiase signing off. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for listening. And as always, let's go Birds.
Fly, Eagles, fly.